Morning. Today's daf in Baba Kama is Chaf Vav. We are in Chaf Amud Aleph. We're in towards the bottom of the Amud. We have a sugya to finish regarding Dayo. At the conclusion, Gemara is going to go through a number of Havaminas to finish off the entire sugya, and then we start with the Mishnah regarding the Nezek of Adam. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. Daf is on the Zechon Ishmas Liba Gavila Bashmuel. We are in the middle of the Sugya of Dayam. We know that one of the ways to darshan the Torah is through Kavachomer. You make a logical argument. You deduce from point A to point B. If the halacha is true in point A, and point A is a more lenient area, so if you go to a more stringent area, so if it's true by point A, it's also going to be true by point B as well. And so this is the kind of argument that one can construct. A person can Adam dan Kavachomer me'atzmo. A person can make a Kavachomer on his own. Assuming that he knows enough, assuming that he knows the basic amount of information, but a person can make a kal v'chomer on his own. And then what we have in the Gemara we saw yesterday is a debate whether or not we're going to apply the rule of Dayo. What's the rule of Dayo? The rule of Dayo is that when I'm extending halacha from A to B, so do we cap the halacha? So the principle of Dayo tells us that we are always going to cap the halacha, meaning that the extension of the halacha from A to B will apply the halacha to B, but it won't be greater than that of A. So how do I know the principle of Dayo? So we know it from last week's Parsha. With the end of last week's Parsha, meaning what we learned yesterday in Shul, the end of last week's Parsha, so we had Miriam and Aaron speaking Lashon Hara about Moshe, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu was upset with Miriam, and the Torah constructs a Kal V'chomer. Look, if her father was upset with her, so she would have to be sequestered for 7 days. Kadosh Baruch Hu was upset with her, so she should be sequestered for 14 days. Okay, and how we arrived at those numbers, so I quoted Tosfos yesterday, second Tosfos on Chaf Hamad Aleph, who gives a couple of opinions of exactly how we got to those numbers, but let's assume those numbers are correct. So what we have basically now is an application of a Kal V'chomer. If father gets upset with Miriam, 7 days sequestering. If her Kadosh Baruch Hu gets upset at her, so she's 14. And yet the Torah then goes out of its way to say, and how long was she held for? How long was she sequestered for? And the answer is 7 days. Why? Because that's the principle of Dayo. Dayo teaches us that even though we're extending a halacha through a Kal V'chomer, but the result is not going to yield a greater number than that which we're learning from. That's the principle of Dayo. And then we have the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon says, yeah, I'm on board with this principle of Dayo, however. If let's say we're learning a halach from A to B, and I know already what the conclusion is regarding B, and the Kal V'chomer is going to get me from A to B, so then the Kal V'chomer is allowing me to go even further. So for example, Rabbi Tarfon says, let's take a look at our halacha. Our halacha in Baba Kama is regarding Keren Berushos HaNizak. Let's say damage was done by an animal through goring, and it was done Berushos HaNizak. So Rabbi Tarfon says, look, Kal V'chomer, let's construct it. Kal V'chomer tells us that if Keren takes place in Rishos HaRabim, and Yerchayv Chatzi Nezek, and there it's a... the Rishus HaRabim is a more lenient area. How do I know it's a more lenient area? Because you're not going to be liable for Shein V'Regel in the Rishus HaRabim. Now, if I were to carry all that over into the Rishus HaNizak, well, what's going to be? In the case of Shein V'Regel, the damages you're going to pay are full damages. So in the case of Keren Rishus HaNizak, Rabbi Tarfon says, we're going to jump up. And so if you do Keren Rishus HaRabim, you're going to pay full damages as well. That's the argument of Rabbi Tarfon based on the Kal V'chomer. What about the principle of Dayo? Dayo tells me that when I'm going from A to B, so if in the Rishus HaRabim, Keren is only Chatzi Nezek, so in the Rishus HaNizak, it should be kept at Chatzi Nezek. So here Rabbi Tarfon makes his argument. And the argument is, we already knew Chatzi Nezek by Rishus HaNizak. That already was a given. So now we have a Kal V'chomer to go from A to B. We already know that the conclusion by B is Chatzi Nezek. So what are we going to do with the Kal V'chomer? Rabbi Tarfon basically is saying that the Kal V'chomer demands a drasha. Meaning it can't be there can't be a Kal V'chomer with no conclusion. Therefore, Rabbi Tarfon says that in the case of Keren, so now we have a Kal V'chomer that takes us to Rishus HaNizak. So what are we going to do with it? We already know it's Chatzi Nezek. So therefore, the Kal V'chomer demands that it goes up from Chatzi Nezek to Nezek Shalem. That's the Kal V'chomer of Rabbi Tarfon, despite the fact that you have the general principle of Dayo. But nevertheless, not when the Kal V'chomer is Mufrach, not when the Kal V'chomer is broken. That is the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. We spent time yesterday discussing, according to Rabbi Tarfon, What do you do with the incident of Miriam and the Kadosh Baruch Hu? And that's a principle of Dayo, and that's a principle of Minat Torah. So what Rabbi Tarfon will tell you is, okay, but over there, I didn't know what the result is going to be in B. The Torah never mentions what happens when a Kadosh Baruch Hu censors you. How long do you get sequestered for? So there's an opening for the Kal Vachomer to teach us from 7 to 7. But if we know if we already know what the halach is regarding B, and I have a Kal Vachomer, so the Kal Vachomer is going to move it up. That is all a basic basic discussion of what we saw in yesterday's Gemara. The Gemara now continues, Amalei Rav Papa L'Abaye. So we are right in the middle of Chafei Amud Aleph. We're continuing where we left off yesterday. And we are going to now have, for a good part of this morning, a lot of Kal Vachomer talk. And see how well we can apply this principle of Dayo. So Amalei Rav Papa L'Abaye V'Hahai Tana D'Lo Darish Dayo V'Af Agav D'Lo Mafrech. I'm going to try to introduce you to a Tana. I say the word try. I'm going to try to introduce you to a Tana that doesn't have Dayo, doesn't have any type of capping whatsoever when it comes to Kal Vachomer, even when there's no Pirch on the Kal Vachomer. Meaning even in a scenario where we don't know what the number is regarding B, or in this case, it's not a number, but we don't know the effect in B. We have a Kal Vachomer. We move from A to B. So generally speaking, what do we say? Dayo. We should cap B to no greater than that of A. I'm going to show you, this is now Abaye's, this is Rav Papa's suggestion to Abaye. I'm going to show you a Tana who makes a Kal Vachomer, doesn't have a Dayo capping, even though we don't know what the result is regarding B. So the Gemara says, for example, Mafrik Kal Vachomer D'Tanya. Now, in order to understand this example, so some basic information we have to know. A man can have two discharges coming out of his private area, and they are both tamei, but with differences. A regular seminal discharge that comes out of a man, so that's what's called keri. Keri is an avatoma, source of tuma. However, the only way it's going to communicate its tuma is only through maga. Only when someone touches the keri is the person going to become tamei. But keri is not, however, not transmittable. The tuma of keri is not transmittable neither through maga nor through masa. Okay. That's number one. Number two is a zav. If a man has another type of discharge, very similar to keri, but it is, I guess in modern medical terms, we would call it some sort of gonorrheal discharge, although I'm just giving an example. It's hard to say what it really is. But in other words, it's a different type of discharge. The Gemara elsewhere goes over a number of basic differences between, recognizes whether it is keri or whether it's zav. The Gemara says elsewhere that if that keri is more viscous than that of zav, that's number one. Number two, they are different shades of white. And number three is that the keri comes out of a aver chai and zav only comes out of aver meis. Okay, your basic difference. In other words, to the casual observer, one can easily recognize the difference of whether or not it's a zav discharge or a keri discharge. If a man is a zav discharge, so now at the second time that he has a zav discharge, so now it is tame b'maga uvemasa. It is both tame both on contact level and on carrying level. Furthermore, when it comes to a person becoming a zav, we also know the halacha is that not only is the zav himself, the zav itself, the actual discharge itself going to be a source of tuma, but the man who discharged the zav, also all of his mayanos, all of his other secretions, his saliva, his urine, are going to be subject to the same degree of tuma, meaning they're going to be tame if he spits. The spittle that comes out of a man who's a zav is going to be tame b'maga uvemasa. And now the question we're going to deal with is a very simple question. Now that we have all the pieces in play, question. Let's say a man is a zav and has a keri discharge while being a zav. What will be of that keri discharge? Well, the keri by itself, as I pointed out just a moment ago, is only tame b'maga. Only tuma is transmitted through contact, not through masa. On the other hand, the person who discharged this keri was a zav, which means that his mayanos, all of his secretions, are going to be tamei b'maga v'masa. So can we not consider, perhaps, that the keri discharge that comes out of him is coming out of a zav, so therefore it should be no worse than a secretion that comes out of him, and therefore that keri should be tamei b'magav amasa. That's the issue that we're discussing. So now, with all that in mind, so let's see how this brice is going to work out. Ditanya, keri b'zav minayin. How do I know that if keri comes out of a man who's already a zav? And basically the question is, what degree of tumah, how transmittable a tumah is it for this keri, meaning the actual discharge itself that comes out of a man who's a zav? Vidinhu. The Gemara says, so now we're going to base it on kavachamer matar, batar tameh. Now, if, let's say, you have a Torah person who has secretions, regular secretions, spit, urine. So obviously those secretions that come out of the man who's tahor, the secretions themselves are tahor. So tameh betameh, matar betahor tameh. So, and yet the keri discharge that comes out of a man is going to be matar betahor tameh betahor eino din shiei tameh betameh. So the Gemara says, now let's take the same scenario where I have the keri discharge coming out of a man who's tameh, where all of his other secretions are going to be tameh. So in a case where a keri comes out of a tahor person, the keri discharge is going to be tameh. So the keri that comes out of a person who's tameh, where his secretions are already tameh, so for sure the keri is going to be tameh. Now, now the assumption going forward is going to be the following. This keri discharge that comes out of a man who's a zav, that keri discharge is going to be tameh both b'maga and b'masa. So what just happened over here? We've learned now through a kal v'chomer that the keri discharge that comes out of a man who's a zav is not only tamei b'maga, but it's also going to be tamei b'masa. And that conclusion was arrived at through a kal v'chomer. Now, think about it. We have now a kal v'chomer that gets us to this point, but remember, with a kal v'chomer, we have the principle of dayo, which means that we have to cap. What happens when keri comes out of a tahor person? It's only tamei b'maga. What happens when keri comes out of a tamei person, meaning a zav? So now we're saying it's going to be tamei b'maga uvemasa. So here we have a scenario in which we're using a kal v'chomer and we're not capping it using the principle of dayo. So here the Gemara is now saying is a situation where we're not using the principle of dayo. And neima ani kal v'chomer l'maga ahani dayo la fuke masa. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Shouldn't the kal v'chomer only teach us that the keri discharge is tamei b'maga? And shouldn't the dayo principle tell us that it should be capped at maga and not go as far as masa? Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Remember, Rabbi Tarfon was of the opinion that I only use the dayo principle when I don't know what the halach is regarding B. Maybe over here, according to Rabbi Tarfon, I don't cap when I know what the conclusion is regarding B. That's Rabbi Tarfon's principle. So the Gemara says, maybe over here we could make the argument that in this particular scenario, maybe I wouldn't know what would be the result if a man who's a zav has a keri discharge. And the Gemara now is prepared to make an argument as follows. Look, if a man has a regular seminal discharge, a keri discharge, he's going to become tameh. And as a result of that, the keri discharge itself is going to be tameh. It's going to be a source of tumah, and it's going to be tameh b'maga. But maybe, this is the Gemara's argument right now, when a zav who already is tameh has a seminal discharge, well, the seminal discharge didn't affect him because he's already tameh. So maybe now the argument is the keri discharge that comes out of him, frankly speaking, we don't know what its status is going to be. And since we don't know, so that's where the kal v'chomer now is going to effectively, the kal v'chomer is going to effectively tell us. Well, if the kal v'chomer is going to effectively tell us and we don't know, so now we should apply a cap. And that cap is going to be only maga. Because I'm learning it from a keri that comes out of a tahor, which is only maga. So the keri that comes out of a zav should only be limited to maga. So that's what the Gemara is ready to argue. Ela davar acher garmlo kamash malan mi divelo davar acher ksiv. So the Gemara says So And that is what the Gemara is trying to argue right now. And so at this point in the Gemara, here's what the Gemara is suggesting. This is what Rav Papa is saying to Abaye. Here we have a scenario where I don't necessarily know where we're going to end on B. We have a Kal V'chomer, and yet the halacha is that the keri that comes out of his Zav is going to be tamei both b'maga and b'masa. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara basically rejects that. The Gemara says no, because the assumption going in is that, well, if the keri comes out of a zav, well, that keri is not tame b'maga. The Gemara says, but that's not true. Meaning, the Torah never limits the keri discharge that comes out of a man. Out of a man who is tahor, the keri discharge is going to be tameh under all circumstances, whether it comes out of a man who's tahor or whether it comes out of a man who's tameh. And therefore, that now means that the keri discharge that comes out is tameh, at least b'maga. I have a kal v'chomer, so because I know what the conclusion is in A and in B, meaning keri coming out of a tahor and keri coming out of a tameh, and so under those circumstances, that's why the kal v'chomer is allowed to exceed A. The kal v'chomer by B is allowed to exceed A because we knew what the conclusion is regarding B. Okay. Umantan d'shamas le'damer shichvat zer shozav metameh memasa. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. You are formulating an entire question based on an assumption, and that is that when keri comes out of a man who's a zav, so that keri comes out is no worse than any other secretion coming out of him, and therefore, just like the urine and the spit that comes out of him is tamei b'maga v'masa, so too should the keri coming out of the zav be tamei b'maga v'masa. But the Gemara points out, I'm going to show you now two Tanayim who both don't agree with that. So Lo Rebbe Lazar v'Lo Rebbe Yeshua did not. Here the Gemara introduces us to a Mishnah. Shech v'zer shozav metame b'maga v'metame b'masa, div Rebbe Eliezer. According to Rebbe Eliezer, when you have shech v'zer coming out of a zav, the shech v'zer is only tame b'maga, not b'masa. Okay, so Rebbe Eliezer is not even in this discussion, because he clearly is of the opinion that keri, even out of a zav, is only tameh b'maga. And Rabbi Yeshua omer af metameh b'masa. Now Rabbi Yeshua says that keri comes out of a zav is tameh b'masa. But the next lines, the next words are critical. Lefishi yefshar b'lo sichsu chaziva. The reason being is because, even though it was a seminal discharge, but together with the seminal discharge, remember, this man's already a zav. So there must be some sort of trace amount of zav discharge mixed in with the keri discharge. And because of that, this keri discharge is going to be tamei b'maga uvemasa. Now, the Gemara notes, Ad kan lo kama Rabbi Yeshua asam ela sheyefshar b'lo sichsu chaziva. The only reason why Rabbi Yeshua views the keri discharge coming out of a zav to be tamei both b'maga v'masa is because the trace amount of ziva that's contained in the keri. Without that, however, he would have said that keri by itself, even though it's coming out of a zav, is only tameh b'maga, not b'masa. So those are two Tanayim, both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, who are both of the opinion that keri coming out of a zav is only tameh b'maga, not b'masa. So when Rav Papa, just give me a second. So when Rav Papa was formulating his question, I see somebody who's making a kal v'chomer and not capping the kal v'chomer, who are we talking about? We're not talking about Rabbi Eliezer and we're not talking about Rabbi Yeshua.
If you think that it's only trace amount, why is there no
bittul? So Ben's question about why don't we say bittul? Why don't we argue bittul? So this question is not found on the daf. The Mordechai, I'd say it's famous only because I know it. But the Mordechai asked a question. One of the interesting, Mordechai gives two answers to the question. One of the interesting answers, and they're both interesting answers, but the second answer of the Mordechai is the one that's talked about pretty often, and I've heard shir on it, and that is that the second answer of the Mordechai is that you do not say bittul when the tarovis was introduced to us together. The only time you say bittul is when you have iser and heter independent of one another, and then get mixed up together. Then and only then you say bittul. But if the tarovis comes to us organically, in this case, coming out of the man together, so then we're not going to say bittul. That's the second answer of the Mordechai. So the Gemara says, Elahai Tana Dinan. So the Gemara says, fine, I'll show you a Mishnah. There's a Mishnah in Kalim, it's the first parak of Kalim. The Mishnah in Kalim is clearly going to be of the opinion that the keri discharge that comes out of a zav is tamei both b'maga v'masa, and the Mishnah goes as follows. Lamala Mehen. above them. The Mishnayos and Kalim are going basically ascending in terms of degrees of Tumah. Zovel Shel Zav, Viroko, Vishikhvat Zaro, Umeme Raglav, any secretions that come out of a Zav, including his spit, his semen, his urine, and dam anida, and dam that comes out of a woman who's anida, matame ben memagav and memasa. So they're on a higher level of tuma, and that higher level of tuma can be seen because it's transmittable through both contact and through carrying. So here you have the Mishnah Kalim that clearly articulates that when you have Sheikh Vazera coming out of a Zav, it's Tameh B'magav Amasa. So it's this Mishnah that Rav Papa was pointing to when he was saying, hey look, you have now Sheikh Vazera, which is normally Tameh B'magav, but because it's coming out of a Zav, it's Tameh B'magav Amasa, and it's a Kavachomer that's taking us up to the next level. So the Gemara says, okay, good. I'm very happy we learned the Mishnah in Kalim. How do I know that the Mishnah in Kalim is referring to, is basing this on the fact that it's Keri coming out of Azav? Maybe the author of this Mishnah in Kalim is subscribing to Rav Yoshua's principle, which is that it's impossible for there to be Keri coming out of Azav without trace amount of Ziva in the Keri. Maybe that's the pshat behind the Mishnah in Kalim. And once again, it is no proof to the idea that just Keri alone by itself is Tame both Memaga Vamasa. So Im Kain Lisne Gabi Zovo. So the Gemara makes a fantastic diuk. Look at that Mishnah and Kalim once again. Look at the top line. Look at the secretions as they're listed in order coming out of the Zav. Zovashol Zav, the secretions out of a Zav, which are his spit, his Sheikh Vazera, and his urine. Now, if the Tana in Kalim was subscribing to Rav Yeshua's principle, that the reason why Keri is Tame B'magav Amasa is because a trace amount of Ziva in it, so then that should be listed number one, right next to Zovo Shel Zav, the secretions of a Zav, and then the Mishnah should have listed Sheikh Vazera. And the reason why is because Sheikh Vazera has trace amounts of Ziva. But the Mishnah didn't do that. The Mishnah first listed spit, then listed Sheikh Vazera, then listed Meimei Raglayim. Why? Because the Tan is telling us that it's just simply because they're secretions. For no other reason. They're just secretions of the Zav. Therefore, they're going to be Tameh B'magav Amasa. And so, it's an excellent diuk. And the Gemara says, yes, the Mishnah in Kalim clearly is of the opinion that the Zav discharge, all the discharges of a Zav, including the Keri, is going to be Tame both Mamaga Uvamasa.
Can you argue that maybe the spittle isn't, but both urine and semen are, because they could both be taken? So the first, they listed the spittle first, and then the next two, because that in common.
Right, but then they should have put that first, meaning next to the Zav.
Okay.
That's how the Gemara is arguing. The Gemara leaves it. Fine. Next attempt. Again, we're trying to locate Tanaim. We're not going to be successful. They hate to give away the punchline. But we're going to attempt to find Tanaim who don't have a Dayo cap, even when the Kal Vachomer would have worked by itself, meaning that we didn't know what the halacha was going to be regarding the B. We're going from A to B. We didn't know what the halacha was regarding B, and still there's a Tanu who says that not only are we going to make a Kal Vachomer, but the Kal Vachomer is going to exceed that which we're learning from. Okay, and we're trying to why the Gemara is making an attempt to find this, meaning it's an interesting exercise that the Gemara is doing right now, because we have so far in the Mishnah two opinions. We have the Tanakam and we have Rabbi Tarfon. Both of them subscribe to Dayo. It's just a question of to what degree. The Chachamim are more assertive of how far they're always going to apply the principle of Dayo, and Rabbi Tarfon is going to only apply the principle of Dayo if we don't know what the B conclusion is going to be. But once we know what the B conclusion is going to be, Dayo is going to take us up a notch. Why the Gemara now is looking for a Tana who is ignoring Dayo altogether, meaning when we don't know of such a Tana, it's an interesting exercise in the Gemara. But the Gemara is doing it, and we're following along. So the Gemara says, consider now the following. Mapas, we're talking about a mat that's made up of reeds. A cushion. It's not really a cushion, but something to sit on. So, mapas be'meitz minayin. How do I know that a mappet is a subject to Tumas Meis? Because in the Torah, when the Torah describes Tumas Meis, the Torah talks about a kli, the Torah does not talk about a simple mat. Vidinu, so the Gemara now is going to arrive at this conclusion through a kav v'chomer. Umapach in ketan shetorim bizav. Now, small earthenware jugs. When I say small, I mean really small, meaning that basically you can't even put your finger into the hole, into the opening of the pachim ketanim. Small earthenware jugs. Now we know the halacha is that earthenware jug is only metame ba'aviro. It only becomes tame when the tumah enters the internal area of the pachim ketanim. And because the zav simply physically cannot put his finger inside the pachim ketanim, so therefore it will become impervious to tumah of a zav. And Rashi over here deals with the issue, what about tumas heset? And Rashi says, if it's not going to be tame through negiyah, it's not going to be tame through heset. If you understood that, great. If not, we move along. The point is that pachim ketanim are impervious to a zav. Now, metame b'meis, and we know that pachim ketanim, smaller than were jugs, if open in the same room as a mace, under the same roof, is tame. So, mapach, a metame b'zav, a mapach which is susceptible to a zav, if a zav were to sit down on the mead, on the reed mat, it's going to become tame, and it should be tame b'meis. So for sure it should be tame b'meis. So here we have a classic havachomer. Mapatz is susceptible to tumas zav, which is a lower degree of tumah than that of meis. So if it's susceptible to tumas zav, it's for sure going to be susceptible to tumas meis. That is our havachomer. Good. It's good, but we should cap it. We know that tumas zav, if something becomes tame through a zav, it's tame for how long? One single day. Meaning you tov on the mikvah, you wait till Harav Shemesh, and it becomes tahor. What about if something becomes susceptible to tumas meis? 7 days. So now the Gemara says, v'kamaisila bein l'tumas erev, bein l'tumas shiva. So the Gemara says, now in this kavachomer, what we're going to do is we're going to extend it. Meaning not only is our reed mat going to become tame through contact, through communication through a mace, but it's also going to be tummy for 7 days. So that is not only a kavachomer, but a kavachomer where we're going to end up with a longer period of tumah than that which we're learning from. So we're not capping the kavachomer, even though ostensibly we didn't know what the conclusion was going to be, and yet. So in other words, we could have made a kavachomer, and we could have limited it to 1 day, and yet this Tana goes 7 days for the reed mat of Tumas Meis. So the Gemara says, so why aren't we capping it? Why don't we say that the reed mat through the kavachomer is going to be tame through Tumas Meis, but only 1 day, not for 7 days? So the Gemara says, this is an old discussion. Okay, back then they were into Tumat Tahara. So like these are the kinds of discussions which were kicked around a lot. So the Gemara says, this is an old discussion. So he says, no. You're quoting one Braisa, I'm going to quote another Braisa, which is the Hachikamer. And this is really what the Braisa was driving at. Mapatz b'sheretz minayin. How do I know that a reed mat is going to be tamei through contact with the sheretz? Because in the Parsha of Sheretz, the Torah does not describe a reed mat. The Torah only describes a kli. Vidinu mapachin ketanin shetorim bizav mitamim b'sheretz. So here the Braisa is going to use the following kavachomer. Again, we'll go back to small earthenware jugs that are impervious to tamazav and tamein b'sheretz, and yet if a sheretz comes into contact with an earthenware jug, it will be tamei. The reason being is because even though the opening of the pachim ketanim is really small, and the finger of a zav cannot get inside, but remember regarding sheretz, you only need a small amount of a sheretz. That the size of a adasha, a lentil, so that can go into the pachim ketanim. So it is subject sheretz is going to be metame pachim ketanim, so metame sheretz mapesh metame bezav in adin shei tame b'sheretz. So mapas, which is subject to tamazav, is for sure going to be tame with tamas sheretz. So the Gemara says that's the kavachomer that the Braisa was driving at. Now that we're here, so then what about the other Braisa? Meaning, how do we learn the conclusion of the other Braisa? Which is, how do we know that Mapas is subject to Tumas Meis? Next question of the Gemara. Ela Mapas Memeis Minayin. How do I know that? Nemar Beged V'Or B'Sheretz. V'Nemar Beged V'Or B'Meis. So the Gemara says, for that, we're going to use the Gzera Shava. And with the Gzera Shava, even though there are questions you can ask on a Gzeira Shava, as long as it is a strong Gzeira Shava, which the Gemara is about to prove, so therefore the Gzeira Shava is going to push through the halacha. Ma beged v'or hamor b'sheretz ma'patz tameh bo. When it comes to clothes and the hide, so regarding a sheretz, so a mappetz is going to be tameh with the contact of a sheretz. I beg it for ur, I'm more bemace, mappetz tameh bo. So too, beg it in ur as it relates to a mace, so a mappetz is going to be tameh through the contact of mace. And then the Gemara points out this Gzereshava is a salak Gzereshava. What establishes a salak Gzereshava? We've discussed this time and again. It's when the words that are used to create the Gzereshava are what the Gemara refers to as mufna, meaning both sides of the Gzereshava. It is the hyperlink of the Torah. When both sides of the Gzeira Shava are totally free and clear, they're superfluous. Mufne di ilo, mufne ikla mifraf, the Gemara says they have to be superfluous because malasher shekem etame becha adasha, tomer bemeshem etame becha adasha, la bechazayas. The Gemara says because if logic were to dictate the halacha, logic would tell us, I can't learn out from sheretz to mace, because sheretz is subject to tumah, even with a small amount of the sheretz remains, even if you only have the size of an adasha. That's a lentil. Masha'enke, when it comes to human remain is only going to be tummy when you have a kezias. So therefore, the shiurim are totally different, which means then that the kavachomer wouldn't work. So the gzereshava has to be a strong gzereshava. La'yif nui mufne. And the Gemara now is just simply validating that both words on each side of the gzereshava are superfluous. Why? Mechki sheretz itzkel shech v'zer, because we know elsewhere the Torah compares shech v'zer to that of sheretz. And dechsev oisha shetetze, and the Gemara quotes the pasuk there mentions both shech v'zera and sheretz. Usmechle oisha sheyiga b'chol sheretz. And a man who touches the sheretz, dechsev bei b'shech v'zera v'chol beged v'chol or sheyia lav shech v'zera. Beged v'or dekas v'chmana b'sheretz lamali. So now, beged and or by sheretz is superfluous because we already know that sheretz and shech v'zera are synonymous. Whatever shech v'zera is going to be metame, sheretz is also going to be metame as well. So then when the Torah tells us that a sheretz is metame, begging an or, so that's superfluous. Great. So that's one side of the Gzeira Shava, which is proven to be superfluous. So the Gemara says, okay, so far what we've shown is that on one side of the Gzeira Shava, the word there is superfluous. So that's a good Gzeira Shava, but not a great one. Now, if you subscribe to the viewpoint that a one-sided Gzeira Shava, one-sided meaning, that only one of the two words are superfluous, so some are of the opinion that makes a bona fide Gzeira Shava unimpeachable. However, Elaman Damar Lameda Mashiva Michael Amemar. However, there's another opinion that says that if I have a Gzeira Shava, where only one side of the Gzeira Shava is superfluous, so it's a Gzeira Shava, but if there's a logical flaw in the Gzeira Shava, so that will break the Gzeira Shava. So the Gemara says, so over here, what we really need is a double bonded Gzeira Shava, where on both sides of the Gzeira Shava, the term is superfluous. So the Gemara now is going to make that point as well. So the Meis Nami Afnui Mufne. So the Gemara says, same thing is true regarding Tomas Meis. Mechti Meis Itzkel Shech V'Zera, because we know that the Meis is connected to Shech V'Zera. Dichziv Anoge B'chol Tamei Nefesh O Ish Asher Teitze Mimenu. In the same pasuk, you have listed Tomas Mace and Shech Vazera. Viksiv baby Shech Vazera v'chol beged v'chol or she love Shech Vazera. So beged or dekas v'chmana b'meis lamali. And I already know that beged and or is listed by Shech Vazera, and the Torah equates Tomas Shech Vazera to Tomas Mace. So I already know that beged and or is tamid Tomas Mace. So now, why does the Torah mention beged and or by Tomas Mace? Shema mina laf nuye. It's superfluous, and it's to create that double bond Gzeira Shava, so that we have a free word by mace, we have a free word by sheretz, v'havi mufna mishnei tzadim. So now it is mufna on both sides. One more hill to climb on this point, and that is the following. We now have a Gzeira Shava, and this Gzeira Shava is now teaching us that that a mapatz is going to be subject to Tomas Mace, and it's going to be subject to Tomas Sheretz. So the Gemara says, wait one second, the Gzeira Shava is teaching us this halacha, Hanich lamanda amara domina v'uki basra, elamanda domina umina ma'ik alamemar. Now when making a Gzeira Shava, there are two basic approaches. One approach is domina v'uki basra, that when you take a Gzeira Shava, so you take a Gzeira Shava and you put it into the context. Meaning, we are learning a halacha now that when it comes to a mapatz, a mat reed, so it's if it's in the room together with a mace, it's subject to tumah. Now, Tumas Meis is tummy for 7 days. Tumas Sheretz is only tummy for 1 day. So the Gemara says, fine. But if the Gzeirah Shava allows us to look at the context, we're fine. Because what's the context of Tumas Meis? Tumas Meis is tummy for 7 days. Okay, so if a mapatz, if a Matt Reed was in the room together with a mace, it will be tummy for 7 days. How do I know that? The Gzeirah Shava and the allowance to, of the Gzeirah Shava to fit in contextually to each parsha. However, if you subscribe to the rule of don mina umina, that means that when I make a Gzeirah Shava, regardless of whether it contextually fits or not, you make the Gzeirah Shava. And over here, the Gzeirah Shava tells me that a mapatz is tummy with a sheretz, and the Gzeirah Shava says that a mapatz is tummy with mace. The mapatz is tummy with a sheretz is only 1 day. The mapatz is tummy with a mace should be tummy only for 1 day. Where do you have that? Where do you have tumas mace for 1 day? It doesn't contextually fit. The Gemara says, okay, that's a problem. If you subscribe to the viewpoint of don mina mina, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it contextually fits. So then, how do I arrive at the conclusion that if a Matt Reed was in the same room as a mace, it's tummy for 7 days? Amarav amakra v'chibastem b'gdechem b'yom hashvi kol tumas atem etamim b'mace lo yepsuchim m'shiva. So the Gemara says, even if you subscribe to don mina umina, I still, whenever we have a halacha of tuma that extends into the world of tumas mace, it's always going to be a 7 day tuma, even if you subscribe to don mina umina. Period. Adkan divrei haGemara. We have now finished our exercise. That was some exercise. We finished our exercise looking for a Tana who doesn't cap his Kal V'chomer, even when the Kal V'chomer is Eino Mufrach. And then at the conclusion of this exercise, as I mentioned in the beginning, the Gemara failed. Meaning, failure, over here, there doesn't exist such a Tana. No Tana ignores the principle of Dayo. Every Tana subscribes to the principle of Dayo. It's just a question of application. According to the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, Dayo is always going to cap a Kal V'chomer. According to Rabbi Tarfon, not always. If we don't know what the halacha is going to be when we're learning a halacha from A to B, so then you cap the halacha by B to that of A. The halacha by B is not going to exceed A. But if we know what the halacha is regarding B, and we have a Kal V'chomer, so then B can exceed A. But even though according to Rabbi Tarfon, there's still going to be a cap on Dayo. There is no such Tana who allows Kal V'chomers to work uncapped. Utehe. We are now in the very bottom of Chavhei Amud Beis. And now, from here until the Mishnah, the Gemara is going to entertain Havaminas. The learning that we're going to be doing for the next 15 minutes, 20 minutes of Gemara, are all going to be exercises in, I do not want to say futility, because it's Torah. And so every word that we learn is going to be part and parcel of the Torah Shabbat Peh. These are Havaminas. These are all suggestions the Gemara is going to make. Every one of them the Gemara is going to reject. It gives us an opportunity. I'm just thinking out loud. Why would the Gemara go through this exercise of coming up with Havaminas and rejecting each one of them? So first of all, it gives us an opportunity to review many of the halachas. I guess that's one opportunity that we have. And also, in other words, based on certain Havamina principles, maybe we can extend it to other areas in halacha. Okay, but here we begin. You know, Shein V'Regel, even though we've learned and we know, the halach is that there's an exemption for Shein V'Regel and there's Rishus Harabim, but maybe using a Kal V'chomer argument, we should say that you're liable for Shein V'Regel and the Rishus Harabim. Consider. Because Karen in the Rishus HaNizak is only liable for half damages, Rishus Harabim Chayeves, and yet it is liable in the Rishus Harabim. So Shein V'Regel, Rishus HaNizak, Mishal HaNizak, so Shein V'Regel, where you're liable for full damages in the Rishus HaNizak, so now if you move over to the Rishus HaRabim, it for sure should be liable. So Amakra will be your b'stei acher v'lo b'Rishus HaRabim. So the Gemara says, okay, the argument is it's a fine argument, but we have a pasuk. The pasuk tells us that Shein V'Regel is only going to be liable in the Rishus HaNizak. So the Gemara says, Midi kuli kamrinan, palga kamrinan. So the Gemara says, well, okay, I'm not saying that we should be liable for full damages in the Rishus HaRabim, but shouldn't you be at least liable for half damages? Meaning the Kal V'chomer can be instructive and teach us that just like Karen is chai for half damages in the Rishus HaRabim, Shein V'Regel should be chai for half damages in the Rishus HaRabim. So Amar Krav, v'chitza was kaspo, kaspo shal zev, kaspo shal acher. So the Gemara says, no, we have another drasha. And the drasha teaches us that the only time that we have this idea of Chatzi Nezek is only going to be limited to Keren. We don't have another area where we're going to apply the principle of Chatzi Nezek. Now, I know there's something called Sereros, but that's Halach LaMoshe MiSinai. But, in other words, but we're not going to have Chatzi Nezek by Shein and Rega. Okay, that is Havamina number one, rejected. Next. Velote Shein v'Rega Chayav Ezbershos HaNizak Ela Chatzi Nezek Mikav HaChomer. So the Gemara says, okay, another suggestion. Maybe Shein v'Rega in the damages, in the damagee's property should only be subject to half damages. Mikav HaChomer Mikaren. Learning it out through a Kav HaChomer from Karen. Ma Karen Shebershos HaRab Mikhayav Ezbershos HaNizak Enem Mishlam Ezel Chatzi Nezek. Look, Karen, you're going to be Chayav, but you're only going to be Chayav half Nezek, both in the public and in the private sector. Shein v'Regel Shebershos HaRab in Petura Ein Odin Shebershos HaNizak Mishlam Chatzi Nezek. Well, Shein v'Regel zero in the Rishos HaRabim, so how much greater should it be in the Rishos HaNizak? It should exceed Chatzi Nezek. Karen didn't exceed Chatzi Nezek, and Karen is more chamor. So Shein v'Regel shouldn't exceed Chatzi Nezek. Amakra Yishalem Teshlum Ma'aya. And again, the Gemara rejects it based on the drasha. The Torah says that when your animal does damages through Shein v'Regel, you make restitution. Restitution means full restitution. A third havamina of the Gemara. V'lo take Karen v'Rishos Rab Mechayim Mekav v'Chomer. Maybe Karen and the Rishos Arabim should not be chayev at all. Ma Shein v'Regel Shebershos HaNizak Nezek Shalom Rishos Arabim Petura. Look, in the Shein v'Regel, in the Rishos HaNizak, you are liable for full damages. Then you move it out to the Rishos Arabim, zero. So we went from full to zero. Karen Shebershos HaNizak Chazi Nezek and Adin Shebershos Arabim Petura. So now by Karen, in the Rishos HaNizak, it's half. So if by Shein v'Regel, we're going to go from 100 to 0, so don't you think by Karen we should be going from 50 to 0? So I'm Rav Yochanan, I'm a Kra, Yechetzun, Ein Chatzi Nezek Chaluk. So again, Drasha. The Drasha tells us that by Karen, you always split the damages, regardless of where it takes place. Lo Bershos Aram, Lo Bershos Yachin.
The Drasha is higher than Kavachom?
Correct. That is a correct statement. The Yehe Adam, continuing. V'yehei adam chayiv b'kofer mikav v'chomer. Now, if a person kills another person, so he should have to pay kofer. Now, let's review. The kofer damages that a person pays is when your animal, which is a muad, goes ahead and is responsible for the death of another person. So, the Torah says, under those circumstances, you pay what the Torah describes as kofer. In English, it translates as ransom, but basically, we assess a value to the person who was killed. Okay, he has some market value, and you pay the family of the victim that amount. That's what's called kofer. What the Gemara now is entertaining is that if a person kills another person, he should pay the family kofer as well. Now, there is a problem over here because we generally know that we have the principle of kimle b'derabamine, that if you do an action, you're not going to be liable for both death and money. And we also know, if I could just complicate the issue here and for just a moment, we also know that this principle of kimle b'derabamine applies even if you yourself are not going to be murdered. So it is a little bit of an enigma, this suggestion of the Gemara. How can the Gemara even be entertaining the idea over here that if you kill somebody, so you are both a murderer and you should be paying kofar? How the Gemara can even entertain it is a bit of a complication. We could go on this point. However, again, it's a havamin over here. And so for the purposes of time consideration, we're just going to go ahead. I acknowledge, however, it's an issue. Look, if your animal kills somebody, now we know with your animal, there's only one damage payment to pay, and that's nezek. For your animal, there's no tsar, ripur, boshes, and Sar, Ripoi, Shevis, and Boshes. The other four payments that we're going to learn about in the 8th parak of Baba Kama, when one person damages another person. That's only person to person. But your property doing damage, you only pay Nezik, you don't pay the other four payments. And so here's the kavachomer. If your animal kills and your animal does not pay dal dvarim, and your animal and for you you're going to be paying kofar. Adam shechay barba dvarim eno din shechay bekofar. So when you damage and or kill, so well not when if you kill, but if you damage, you're chayv dal dvarim. So it sees that you're more liable for your actions. So based on this argument, you should be paying kofar. Amar kra kachol asher yushas alav alav alo aladam. And again, the Gemara's answer is drasha. The drasha tells us that the kofar payment that you pay is only when your animal does damage or your animal kills, not when you kill. Another havamina. Maybe when your animal damages somebody, you should pay dal dvarim. You should pay the additional four payments. Look, when we do damage, we don't have a concept of kofar, and yet we pay the four additional payments. Sure, shechay bekofar in addition shechay bar bedvarim. So we see that there's a chumra by shore, and that if your shore kills, you have to pay kofar. So if your shore damages, you should be paying dal dvarim. And again, that was a havamina. The drasha is, the Gemara's answer is, it's a drasha. We finish up this discussion with the following. Let's say, Rachman al-Islan, God forbid, your animal kills a person in the Rishus HaNizak. So the Gemara here gives the illustration of a tinok, just simply because it is a case that is imaginable, envisionable. And so your shor kills a child through the damage of rego. And this is done in the Rishus HaNizak. So we know that by damages, you're going to be liable for full payment. But this is not damages now. Your animal killed a child. So now the Gemara's question is as follows. Bechatzar Nizak, and this took place in the Chatzar Nizak, and the reason why the Gemara is setting this up in Chatzar Nizak is because you know you're liable for Shein in Chatzar Nizak. So Maushatash and Kofar. So under these circumstances, do you pay now the Kofar payment? Now, the Gemara explains the question. Because consider, where is the source in the Torah that describes Kofar? That is, if your animal is a muad, it has consistently gored to the point now where its status goes from tam to being a muad, and then after becoming a muad, it kills a person. Under those circumstances, I have to pay kofar. Now, hachanami loshna, here too. Now, granted that my animal is not a muad in the sense that it hasn't gored 2-3 times, but remember, we're not talking about Karen. We're talking about Shane. Shane versus Anizak. Now Shane damage, it's your or from the get-go liable for full damages of Shane versus Anizak. So just like by Karen, once you have full liability for Karen, you then have to pay kofar in the event of death. So what the Gemara now is suggesting is that by Shane, because you have full liability of Shane in the Rishus HaNizak, you should be paying kofar. Odilma Karen Kavanas Alahazik, hi in Kavanas Alahazik. Or the Gemara says no. Maybe even though there is full liability, but they're still fundamentally different. Because by Karen, there was intent on the part of the animal to do damage. It's unusual for the animal, for the domesticated animal to lower its head into gore. It has done so. It was intent on doing so. However, Shane, it's incidental. Even though you have full liability for the damage that it caused, it's in kavanos lahazik, and therefore there's no kofar payment to pay. This is the Gemara's question, Tashma. The Gemara says, well, let's consider. Let's say that your shor went into the chatzar of the balabais, and without permission, v'nachol balabais umes, and it gored the owner of the home, and it killed the owner of the home. Hashur b'skila. Now, as far as the shor is concerned, so the shor is liable for murder, and therefore the shor is put to death. Now, as far as the owner of the shor is concerned, whether the animal is a tam or whether it's a muad, you're going to, according to Rabbi Tarfon, pay kofar shalem. Divrei Rabbi Tarfon. Now, kofar shalem b'tam l'Rabbi Tarfon menale. Now, the Gemara says, it's an interesting conclusion. We know that there's kofar payment for your animal who's a muad. But what Rabbi Tarfon is doing now is extending this idea to your tam animal that gores in the Rishus Haniza. Now, how did Rabbi Tarfon arrive at that conclusion? So the Gemara says, "Lami Shum, the Savra Leker Rav Yosef Galili Damer Tam Mishalim Chatzi Kofer Birushus Arabim." So it must be that Rabbi Tarfon had a starting point. What was the starting point of Rabbi Tarfon? It must be that he subscribes to Rav Yosef Galili's position, which is that if your animal was a tam and killed somebody in the Rishus Arabim, you're going to pay Chatzi Nezek. Now, this is a position of Yosef Galili. It's a Das Yachid, but the Gemara is saying, but this must be the basis of Rabbi Tarfon. And the argument now will go like this. So, Maisa Lami Kavachomer, Mi Rego. And it must be that now we're going to use the Kavachomer principle. And the Kavachomer principle will tell us the following. If your animal, which is a Tom, and you're liable for Chatzi Kofer in the Rishus HaRabim, so then in the Rishus HaNizak, where Rabbi Tarfon moves up the damages to full damages, will also move up the Kofer from half to full as well. So, Ama Ika Kofer Berego. But, all this will only work if there's a concept of Kofer by Rego. Meaning, the Kal V'Chomer has to be platformed on the idea of regal. So Amar Shimi min Arda Tanim min Zikin de regal Maisila. So the Gemara says, well, the author of the Tana, maybe he's learning the Kal V'Chomer based on damages done by regal. So the Gemara says, V'lifrach man lezakin de regal shekein yeshna be'esh. So the Gemara says, really damages? Gemara says, well, that's not going to be a Val Kal V'Chomer, because if we're just talking about the damages done by regal, so the Gemara says, consider that if you kill somebody with a fire, there's no kofer payment. Meaning the kofer payment is coming strictly from an animal. So the Gemara says, mitama. So the Gemara says, well, what if we consider that the item in question was covered? And as we learned before, and as we're going to say right now again, we know for a covered item, there's going to be an exemption from fire. So the Gemara says, malatama shekein yesh nam b'bor. So the Gemara says, well, if something was covered, you're still going to be liable with bor, the nezek of bor, so mikalim. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we're talking about utensils. Utensils we have, I don't know if we've said this yet, but we're going to learn later on that any damages of utensils in a pit are going to be exempt. So the Gemara says, Malakin Shiesh Nam Be'esh. Well, the Gemara says, well, that's not going to work out, because we know that if fire damages Kalim, you're going to be liable. So the Gemara says, Mikalim Temunim. So the Gemara says, okay, so let's construct a scenario in which it's a utensil that's covered. Because it's a utensil, it's exempt from pit. Because it's covered, it's exempt from fire. So the only thing it's going to be subject to in terms of nezek is going to be that of the animal. Malakelim tamunat sheyeshnam ba'adam. The Gemara says, yeah, but they are not going to be exempt from man. And there is no kofer when one man kills another man. Alav shemai minam, mikofer deregal, maisila. So the only way to construct the Kal V'Chomer is by starting with the assumption that it comes from kofer of regal. So, ama ika kofer beregal, shmamina. So, based on this, meaning that the only way he could have constructed his Kal V'Chomer is based on kofer by regal, so it must be that there's a concept of kofer as it relates to regal. Okay. And the Gemara over here seemingly is just repeating this basic point again. It's logical that not only is a person subject to kofer when it comes to damages done by his animal through Karen, but also through Regal as well. Because if the Kal V'Chomer was based on damages, well, look, the damages done through Regal exist by regal. Allah shmamina be kofer deregal maisila. It must come through kofer. Ama ika kofer beregal shmamina. So he repeats basically the same point, that there must be a concept of kofer as it relates to regal. So to this last question, the Gemara concludes in that if your animal were to be responsible for the death of somebody in their property through regal, so even though the Torah speaks about kofer as it relates to your animal, which is a muad, Karen Muad, it must be that through the Kal V'Chomer, the same thing would be true if your animal killed somebody in the Rishus HaNizak through Rego. Okay. All right. That brings us to the Mishnah. Let's just quickly wrap up, and tomorrow we'll start with the Mishnah of Adam Ur La'olam, and tomorrow we start the classic discussion, the Gemara, regarding damages that are done by a person. In the meantime, today we finished up the sugya of Kav HaChomer between Rabbi Tarfon and the Chachamim, a question of Dayo, a question of capping a Kav HaChomer. Chachamim say unequivocally, we always cap a Kav HaChomer. The conclusion to when making Kav HaChomer from A to B, B can never exceed A. That is the opinion of the Chachamim. Rabbi Tarfon says, not always. Sometimes, when making a Kav HaChomer, B can exceed A. When will that be? When we already know what the conclusion of B is. And we have a Kav HaChomer, so therefore the Kav HaChomer demands that the conclusion by B must exceed that of A. That is point number one. Point number two is the Gemara spent a considerable amount of time looking for a Tana who dismisses Dayo altogether. The Gemara was unsuccessful in finding such a Tana. Then the Gemara today went over a number of Havaminas based on Kav HaChomer that should lead us to some what we would call funny conclusions. But the Gemara says even though the Kav HaChomers are legitimate, but the Drashas are going to trump the Kav HaChomer. And the Gemara went through five different Havaminas. And then finally, and the Gemara concluded today regarding the discussion of is there a concept of kofar when it comes to the damage, when it comes to the death caused by regel. Regel in a Rishus HaNizak. In the Rishus Rabim, so you're pater. But in the Rishus HaNizak, where you have full liability, is there a concept of kofar? And the Gemara says, yes. At least according to Rabbi Tarfon, there would be a concept of kofar. And then the complicated part is that how Rabbi Tarfon arrived at that conclusion, it's based on a Kav HaChomer platformed on the position of Rav Yossi HaGlili. Adkan.